Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this December the 5th on the West Coast, now December the 6th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone, and of course, everywhere east of the East Coast, all the way around the world. We'd also like to welcome those listening in tonight on Wind Talkers Radio Network. And we appreciate them broadcasting the show as well as listening in. Tonight's guest will be with us in a moment. He's our regular Monday night guest, and we moved him over to Wednesday this week to accommodate his schedule. And we're going to be talking about a number of issues, I think some pretty interesting solutions that I've been pondering. And of course, the thing that's on everyone's mind right now is the topic of money.
Oh,
from the words of keyboardist and multi-keyboardist, I should say, composer, singer George Duke, Money from his Illusions album. It's interesting how many people have recorded songs about money. And there was a line in there. I know he purposely tucked the vocals inside the music to make it funky, because the topic of money is generally funky anyway. he said, the politicians say all you have to do is believe and you'll have it. And that's not really true. We're going to talk about that and some other things with tonight's guest. He hosts his own show Monday through Wednesday evenings on the East Coast, and it's late, earlier in the afternoon or late in the afternoon on the West Coast on the microeffect.com, the story behind the story. His website is atrueot.com, and he's got a couple of other sites that have sprung up recently. He is a PhD, also a naturopath, author, prolific author, lecturer, talk show host, and talk show guest, especially on the alternative media, my good friend, Dr. A. Truat. True, welcome to the show, and Happy New Year.
Thank you, Don. It is 2011, isn't it?
It sure is. lots of things going on right now. Many we can't talk about yet. But I've been listening to your show. You had a very interesting guest on your show this evening, and you were talking about this issue of money and, of course, the corruption that we have. And we're hearing this insane talk about bailouts again. And I started thinking about the no-legged Mac Daddy in Washington and the fact that at the Democratic National Convention, certain stipulations were left out of the paperwork when he was nominated to run as the Democratic National Committee's candidate for the presidency. And these, in other words, the documentation, which is a constitutional requirement, was omitted and signed by, I believe, Nancy Pelosi, Howard Dean, who was the chairman of the Democratic National Committee, and they left out this important information, particularly the birthplace and the qualifications of the no-legged Mac Daddy to run for that office. And then that was passed on to all 50 states and approved by each of the secretaries of state or whomever handles the elections in each state. And I submit that that is most likely very contestable, is it not?
Well, yeah, it's the responsibility of the chairman of the DNC to properly vet and certify that their candidate is qualified in every way under the Constitution. Now, obviously, that vetting process was short-circuited, sidestepped. This was something I talked about on my show about a year ago, Don, and it's good to bring it back up because it's proof of a conspiracy, a fraudulent conspiracy, and there's specific civil and criminal penalties for that. I mean, this is a crime that's happened.
Yes, well, I agree. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I think some people ought to spend some time in Club Fed, you know, in Brian's and prison bars with this.
yes. Now I covered that on my show as well during the period of the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado. What a wonderful place they chose to hold that event, with all of its Illuminati symbolism at the airport, underground bases, and the history of corruption, at least going back to the days of Eisenhower, we know, again, from my research in that area. I have a personal friend that called the Democratic National Committee office to speak with John Dean. And of course, they were filtering the phone calls. The receptionist made the comment when it was brought up that these papers were unlawfully submitted. And as you just mentioned, candidates were not properly vetted by the committee. And the retort was, oh, we've already taken care of that in court. Now, had you heard anything about that issue being in court at that time? And I also submit that John McCain, based on my research, which I wrote about in the Three Stooges Go to Washington, was also not qualified to run. The Republican National Committee has the same problem.
Right. It's just, I think that's again by design. It was tit for tat, you know, that McCain not being natural born as well as Obama, how could they really, you know, have the checks and balances when both of them are out of balance?
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned a conspiracy prior to the election in 2008. There was, I believe it was in the month of March, may have been May, but I believe it was toward the end of March of 2008. There was a resolution brought forth to basically declare John McCain eligible to run for the presidency, that because he was born in Kokosolo Naval Base, alleged to have been born there. I proved that he was not, on the basis of the hospital not having been built for 7.5 years until after his alleged birth there. This resolution declared him eligible to run as a citizen of the United States. And guess who sponsored that bill?
Probably Bush? I don't know.
Hillary Clinton.
Ah.
And Barack Hussein Obama.
I see.
Okay. Now, Obama's vetting, if you want to call it that, was done through a whole litany of citations that were bestowed upon the state of Hawaii, which Native Hawaiians say never was made a state officially. And it is actually a kingdom, a sovereign kingdom. And they reciprocated with a statement tucked into a whole litany of commendations for musicians and artists and philanthropists that came from Hawaii, historical figures. And he was tucked in there in the middle. That he was born there in Hawaii. And again, my research and the phony photographs depicting events that did not occur, CIA compilations is what we're talking about, allowed him the same courtesy that they gave John McCain. So we had two conspiracies on that score. And I would even go further, but the work is not published yet, about Hillary Clinton's ineligibility as well. It's over and over and over again with all of these characters. And people are arguing over the legitimacy of the laws that are being created and all these executive orders and signing statements that have come down to circumvent the law and the Constitution. And we do have recourse here. Please go ahead and comment. I didn't mean to be.
No. I'm just looking. You know, all of these things are just a symptom of the bigger problem, and that's just a totally naive and public that just lets this go on without demanding justice on this. I mean, it just continues, and I like the quote that. This is supposedly what a high official in the Czech Republic had published in a newspaper concerning America and our president, so-called. And I just, you know, this kind of sums it up, where this is all going. We can we sit here and talk about this evil person, this communist socialist man in the White House, but it's not that. That's really not the issue. Here basically sums it up. The quote is this: "The danger to America is not Barack Obama, but a citizenry capable of entrusting a man like him with the presidency."
Mm-hmm.
It'll be far easier to limit and undo the follies of an Obama presidency than to restore the necessary common sense and good judgment to a depraved electorate willing to have such a man for their president to begin with. The problem is much deeper and far more serious than Mr. Obama, who was a mere symptom of what is ailing America. Blaming the prince of the fools should not blind anyone to the vast confederacy of fools that made him their prince. The Republic can survive a Barack Obama, who is, after all, merely a fool, is much less likely to survive a multitude of fools, such as those who made him their president. You know, wow. I guess that pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, do you want to? Who wrote that, by the way? I read that a few days ago, James.
Yeah, I believe it was published in the Czech newspaper quite about a year or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
but it's right on. I mean, I remember commenting on this about the same time last year on my show, and I made the challenge a year ago. Is it going to continue? You know, there's nobody with enough gonads to stand up as far as the Supreme Court or any judge and rule the obvious. There's no proof that he has the basic requirements met, and then of course to investigate and to prosecute Pelosi and the Harry Reids and all that who claim to have properly vetted him. It's absolutely incredible that they get away with breaking the highest law and structure of the land. That's choosing our president.
Yes.
So yeah, we are.
Go ahead.
We are a band of fools in that regard, and we pretty much get what we deserve in that case.
What would our theme song be if we're a band? you know, I agree with what you're saying. There is one judge, however. In fact, if I can impose upon you, I think you'd find this very interesting. At the Campaign for Liberty, Judge Andrew Napolitano had some very interesting things to say. I certainly wouldn't play all three clips. The show is not long enough to allow us a dialogue on this, but at least a portion of the first clip is worth listening to,
mm-hmm.
The comments he made. There is a judge that is after the truth and is not afraid to speak his mind. This is Judge Andrew Napolitano on natural rights and the Patriot Act.
When we were colonists, and all of this happened right here where we are, my God, we're in Valley Forge of all wonderful places. When we were colonists and the king wanted to raise money from us, he and the parliament had ingenious ways of doing it. And one of the ways that they raised money was to enact the Stamp Act. And the Stamp Act required that every piece of paper in your possession, a book, a pamphlet, a lease, a deed, a mortgage, even a poster you were going to nail to a tree, had to have a stamp on it with the king's image. You think it was rough going to a post office? This was a foreign post office run by the king in the colonies, and you had to go there and get these stamps. Question: how did the king know that his image was on every piece of paper in your possession? Answer: the Parliament enacted something called the Writs of Assistance Act. This horrible piece of legislation authorized British soldiers to write their own search warrants. So a British soldier would show up at your door in New York or New Jersey or Pennsylvania or Delaware and handwrite out authority which authorized him to enter your house, ostensibly to look for the stamps. There was no judge involved. There was no evidence that you didn't have the stamps. There was no evidence that you had any documents that required the stamps. He was just permitted to enter and, while there, take what he wanted. Rum from the islands without a tax stamp. You can't prove you paid the tax on it. We're going to confiscate it. Furniture from the mother country. You can't prove you paid a tariff on it. We're going to confiscate it. By the way, we have 15 soldiers that need a good hot meal and a place to stay tonight. We're taking over your farmhouse. Enough was enough. We fought a revolution. We won the revolution. We wrote a constitution. And the whole purpose of the constitution was to keep the government off the people's backs. The only reason the Constitution was enacted was because of the promise that the Bill of Rights would be part of it. So it is enacted. It is debated in 87. It's enacted in 89. And in 91, the Bill of Rights is added. And the Bill of Rights enumerates the liberties that we believe are ours by our birthright. When the Constitution was being debated not far from here in Philadelphia, there was a great argument about the origin of our freedoms. Question, where do our freedoms come from? Answer, if the person answering is Thomas Jefferson, from our humanity. God created us in his image and likeness, and as he is perfectly free, so too are we perfectly free. And when Jefferson wrote in the Declaration of Independence that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, and that among these is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, he answered that question for all time. Our freedom comes from our humanity. This belief is known as the natural law, that our freedoms are as natural to us as the fingers on the ends of our hands, the noses in the middle of our faces, or any part of our body or any part of our spirit. The first piece of legislation ever enacted by the Congress of the United States was to adopt the Declaration of Independence. And the Declaration of Independence, just as they signed it, just as they promulgated it on July 4th, 1776, is part of the law of the land. And so if anybody says to you, well, what do you do when the government violates our natural rights? You do what the law of the United States says you do. It is the duty of the people to alter or abolish a government that violates our rights. And so we wrote a constitution, and the constitution, because of the Bill of Rights, it had specific guarantees of natural rights that the government couldn't interfere with. The right to think as you want, the right to say what you think, the right to develop your own personality. I frequently told O'Reilly that's the right he should be most grateful for. The right to publish what you say, the right to worship as you want, the right not to worship if you don't want, the right to self-defense, the right to use a gun when the police are unwilling or unable to protect you. And the right to use that gun on the government if it steals our freedoms, if it's taken over by a tyrant. The most unique of American rights is articulated in the Fourth Amendment. And after the right to life, it is the greatest of rights. It is the right to be left alone. We call it the right to privacy. and it reversed the Writs of Assistance Act. And it said if the government has a target, someone from whom they want evidence, no matter how guilty is the target, no matter how widespread is the belief in the guilt of the target, no matter how accurate is the belief in the guilt of the target, when the government wants to get in your property or in your home or into your bank account or into your papers, it must go to a neutral judge. And it must present to that judge what the Constitution calls and what lawyers know as probable cause, evidence under oath that it is more likely than not that the target or the custodian of these papers possesses evidence of a crime. That was the law of the land in the United States of America until it slowly began being worn away in the lifetime of everyone in this room. Let's get this straight. The right to privacy, this unique American right, required that everyone from the government that wanted anything from a private person had to go to a neutral judge and swear an oath and present evidence to that judge as to why the person's right to privacy should be violated. Now, we all know what happened on 9/11. And many of you live right here, Shanksville, Pennsylvania, Washington, D.C., Lower Manhattan. None of those is more than a day's ride from here. Many of you probably know victims of 9/11. I did. A lot of us at Fox did. I happened to have been in New Jersey the morning when it happened, and we all have horrific memories, and it was one of the darkest days in American history. But my friends, assaults by fanatics on our safety does not justify assaults by the government on our freedom. The Bush administration went to the Congress and said, we have to have the Patriot Act, and we need it right now because the terrorists are under every bedpost and behind every toilet and inside every refrigerator. And if we don't have these powers, we will not be kept safe. And so the Patriot Act, which is 315 pages long, which basically amends hundreds and hundreds of other statutes. So in order to read the Patriot Act, you not only need the act itself in front of you, you need the entire United States Code, which is about the size of 8 or 10 sets of Encyclopedia Britannica. I've read it 3 times, and it takes about 20 hours to read each time. The Patriot Act was posted on the House intranet, the internal internet, to which only members of the House of Representatives and their senior staff have access for 15 minutes before the vote. There was no debate on the floor of the House, and the Patriot Act was enacted.
Very interesting speech, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I disagree with some of the things he says, but this is not fanatics. It was its own government that caused 9/11, and that's becoming more and more evident.
Well, I think he was correct in calling them fanatics. He didn't name who it was, but he did. Fanatics come from all over the place.
Yeah, and as far as actually winning the Revolutionary War, that's a part of history that's quite debatable. Did we win the battles? Yeah, we did. If you read the Treaty of Versailles in France, there was not it was not unconditional surrender. There was some rights granted as far as autonomy, but the bottom line is the Treaty of Versailles actually billed the United States for losses of the Hessian soldiers. There was reparations had to be made to Great Britain. Does that sound like a victory? when you have to make payments to the enemy you supposedly conquered for lost mercenaries?
Well, that's because the war was financed by the king of England.
My point is, you see, the Bank of England and the charter of the First National Bank came right on the heels of that the revolution, and until you really are autonomous with money, you really have no true independence and freedom. And with all due respect to Napolitano and all the things he said so eloquently there, it's just funny that him, Bill O'Reilly, Hannity, Beck, and the rest of they'll never really get to this issue of the money for some reason. They, we talk about the freedoms of the Constitution. Well, if the Constitution I've read and studied show that it's one of the most critical things is that the appendage called the Coinage Act of 1792. The debates in the First and Second Congress clearly show the importance placed on having an honest, sound money supply, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why is this? This is what I was talked about today with my guest, Bill Steele, tonight, I should say. And it's a continuing debate subject because it's becoming more and more apparent to me personally, Don, that until you get this national runaway freight train called the national debt under control and stop the ability of the president, so-called, to give out trillions of dollars in so-called quantitative easements. For heaven's sakes, that's got to stop. It's until that is reined in, there is no hope for taking this country back.
Yes. Now, he did mention, he used the term, a neutral judge. Aren't all judges professed to be impartial and therefore neutral? By rote, of course, we know that that's not the case. The conspiracy goes through the Justice Department as well.
Indeed, and there are so many cases of wrongful warrants issued. Just here, with a very close friend of mine, his brother-in-law was shot and killed in a no-knock warrant raid. Okay, somehow a so-called neutral judge had signed this no-knock search warrant, which empowered the Drug Task Force to come in, knock down a door, batter down a door, come in and use deadly force. In fact, shoot and kill this suspect. And there were no drugs being peddled. It was an absolute false tip. And do you think that this judge would come out and demand that whoever swore out the statement, be held accountable? It's not going to happen. It never has happened. So how impartial is any judge? I think it's just a bunch of rhetoric.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's, in this case, I'm not defending Judge Napolitano, but he's bringing out the basic premise of what the Constitution stands for.
What should be, and then yes. Of course you have Bush and Obama, although he hasn't publicly said it. Their general consensus is there is no such thing as constitutional law or common law or natural law. It's all been replaced by the corporate law of the Uniform Commercial Code. Thus, you see Bush saying that a constitution is just a g-damned piece of paper.
Mm-hmm. During your show tonight, the issue of the RICO statutes was brought up, and when you consider all this, this is all racketeering, and it's doing it under the color of authority of government. When you have this Hegelian dialectical representation of the fiction of government as posing as the leadership of a nation. They like to use the term democracy. We've defined what democracy is, and that's not what I'm promoting here. But what I'm saying is it's nothing but racketeering. It's organized crime. It's all conspiratorial. And I find it ludicrous that they created these RICO statutes, and yet they're in violation of the very statutes that they created to prevent these sorts of financial crimes from being committed. And that's why these people are put into power, to continue this overthrow, this subversive overthrow of the government and the people. Go ahead. I know you're chomping at the bit to say something.
Well, it's the biggest RICO is the Federal Reserve structure, and we went over that in my show. Let me just briefly explain to the listeners that may not understand really the system and how it works. The money, the federal government basically gives a budget, figuring how much money they need to operate the government, to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, and a bond is then issued that just like this is what the word says, bond, it puts people in bondage. It's a debt instrument, okay, that then is executed to print X number of dollars for that request. And every time the Federal Reserve issues new money into the supply chain, that's a debt base that continues to expand and grow and grow and grow exponentially. Now, the danger you have is this, and we explained this. You've got this new issue of currency going into the member banks, the so-called Federal Reserve member banks, all across the country. Now, by law, depending on the type of bank they are, they can take the money, this currency that's just created out of the bond issue, the debt issue, and they're allotted this amount based on the amount of assets that the banks have. And the assets are basically liabilities. They're debt instruments that are loans outstanding. So they get this new supply of money, and they can leverage this out in what's called fractional reserve lending practices, where they can multiply these new Federal Reserve notes that are in their computer system by 12 times. So if you have $1,000 in new issued money to the banking system, they can lend that out at 12,000 times, or $12,000, okay, from 1,000. What has come to light is this. Banks such as J.P. Morgan actually ignoring that lawful leverage structure, where they are now at 52, 53 to 1. You see that Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, which should be at 10 to 1, are over 63 to 1. But but Goldman Sachs and their margin and hedge fund structures are leveraged out 333 to 1 with impunity. And then you have Barack Obama publicly discussing the subject and declaring that there should be no limits. They could leverage to infinity if they want. That is nothing but a recipe for a nuclear bomb on the economy. That's all it is, plain and simple. And then you have these quantitative easement programs, the TARP bailouts, all of these going primarily to the banks that are supposedly too big to fail. Right, they're being bailed out with the very money that's being paid in a bond issue to the central banking families to begin with, but they're doing these new issues without a bond structure. Mm-hmm. This is the root cause of the implosion that's going to happen. You've got $2 to $3 trillion of of non-debt bonding money going into the system, what that is doing is putting a ticking time bomb on the treasury bill securities held by such countries as China to the tune of $3 trillion or so. It's like saying this is an undercutting of the stability. This is why we're in such a precarious position right now.
Yeah, and this evening, Fox News Radio, while I was in my car, Fox News said, and the Dow Jones average was up 32 points today. You know, I mean, they just make this stuff up. It's just made up, and they're not really even scratching the surface as to what's going on, how all of this funny money is really being created. There is no need to bail out anyone other than they're just stealing more money, and they're using that as an excuse.
The video we talked about with Bill Still, he won a independent film festival award for this. It's the Secret of Oz documentary. Very well done, very informative, and very easy to watch. It's short, relatively short, an hour, 40 minutes, but it's entertaining completely. You can actually get this online free of charge. You can watch it on YouTube, as I've done. But it explains the symbolism that L. Frank Baum put into the children's story, you know, of The Wizard of Oz. It's amazing analogies. The Yellow Brick Road is the banking families of the Federal Reserve, basically, that have all the gold. You know, the entire country was looking at this gambit of a central bank being formed. They were it was manipulation of the people with the gold to basically cause the depression that occurred in 1893. People don't realize that we had a major depression then, as well as 1929. The whole impetus of the central bank being formed in 1913, the debate was we need the central bank to stop another depression such as 1893 from happening. So L. Frank Baum lived this in this era, saw the homelessness, the lost farms, the displaced homeowners, the Dust Bowl, okay, so-called the this all occurred, ladies and gentlemen, under L. Frank Baum's early years. So he wrote about it in allegory and symbolism of this children's book. An amazing truth, you know, right today that we had to take advantage of and learn from. The basic central theme then, as now, is monetary reform. The biggest and most important single power of either a state government, but mostly the federal government, is to coin and print money on your own nickel, not having it done as a borrowing. I gave the analogy. It's like you've got a storeroom full of grain, and you have your own grindstone to make your own flour, but no, you go borrow from your neighbor his flour and pay him an outrageous sum for the privilege of borrowing from him. This country, every country really, every republic has the inalienable right to print and regulate the quantity of the money supply. That's what Lincoln did during the Civil War and towards the end of the Civil War. That's exactly what we still can do immediately and get this country away from its fraudulent debt money structure.
Mm-hmm. Now, in if we were to talk about stimulus money or bailout money, the stimulus money is being, well, I'll give you an example. There was an article that came out on freep.com just yesterday, or I should say on the 4th, to be more specific. Detroit Public Schools forced 40,000 kids to get laptops from stimulus funds. And
these are kindergarten kids.
Well, they're doing this all over. They're doing this in the area where I live. They're actually going to be leasing 2,500 computers. And, of course, the kids are required to purchase insurance on these. You see, there's a money scam in everything. This is nothing but racketeering. No-bid contracts. These are no-bid contracts. They just go in and say, we're doing this. And they do it, and it's benefiting Apple Computer, Hewlett Packard, and who knows who else is involved. But there are some mystery software programs attached to these stimulus projects. Stimulus, is that what they need in Detroit? You've got people out of work. It's a ghost town of former industry and the buildings, because people can't afford to live there anymore. The buildings are just rotting, rat infested, drug infested, crime infested. Even Michael Moore did films on Flint, Michigan years ago. Roger and Me, if you remember that that expose that he was doing on General Motors. And isn't it interesting how General Motors ends up in the hands of a usurper from a foreign country that can't even prove he's human? it's crazy what's going on. And this is being alleged to improve the schools. It's just more money laundering and more theft and more privatization of public funds. And they should be held accountable for this stuff as much as they should for what they're doing with the banks, what they're doing with the derivatives and hedge fund brokerage firms, the Goldman Sachs's and the JP Morgan's and all the other companies that we've heard about so many times. That's just the tip of the iceberg, because it spills out into the nationwide real estate market and the foreign investment market, and it's there's just no end to it. It's got to be stopped.
Well, it does indeed. If you really want to stimulate the economy, here's what you do. You don't give it to the banks. Look at all of, you know, if you have a couple $1 trillion in stimulus funds, look at the outstanding mortgages of across the board. You can negate the mortgages and stimulate the economy that way much, much more effectively. But again, Americans really don't want, the honest ones don't want a free lunch. You know, when you start giving this out, you might as well just call yourself socialist and be done with it, okay? But to bail out the fat cats is a sure sign of a plutocracy forming, where you have the rule of the rich, okay, and that is what is really dangerous. It goes back to that quote from the Czech Republic. You know, the prince of fools can only have power when the citizenry are all, you know, bigger fools than he is.
Mm-hmm. These problems seem to be endemic with the systematic infiltration by foreign agents into this country over the past, well, just round it off and say the past 100 years. It's been a lot more than that. You could easily say 230, 240 years. And I'm going to keep beating that drum on my end. I've got new information on George H.W. Bush as well. Not that I hadn't already proven that he was an infiltrator before, but even more incriminating evidence. that places him in Dachau in 1947. And he couldn't have been in Dachau and Yale at the same time. And I examined some photographs from Yale, and they're just as phony as the ones of the no-legged Mac Daddy sitting in the White House now. So we have to do something about this. We have to identify these beings, identify their corrupt activities throughout their history in this country, the mass murder they committed. It's amazing. And if you've been following the news, have you been hearing the recent stories about former aides to these presidents who are dropping like flies suddenly again?
No, I haven't followed that. I can't say.
Well, there's it's a topic for another show. But just recently, I mean, they found one Bush aide in a landfill in New Jersey. No one had even reported this individual as missing. And it was obvious he was murdered. He was fighting for the American veterans and their benefits. And it basically had become a lifelong pursuit. Any surprise? No, not here. Of course, you won't hear this on mainstream media. What I do find interesting, though, is that for over 4 years, I have been talking about the trillions of dollars being stolen. And now they're throwing the trillion-dollar figures out on mainstream media with regularity, as if, you know, and they leapfrogged over billions. You remember, it wasn't too many years ago, well, this is going to cost so many million, and this is going to cost so many million. Once in a while, they would say, well, they're going to have to put $1 or $2 billion into some big project or big program. It was going to be very expensive. We're going to have to tighten our belts to pull this off. Suddenly, they leapfrogged over the hundreds of billions of dollars into the realm of trillions. And a lot of that is because we are getting the truth out to people, and people are writing about it. People are reading it. People are talking about it in the alternative media. And probably only 25% to 30% of the alternative media is telling the truth. The rest is all disinformation. And there's literally no one in the mainstream telling the truth. You might find a radio station here or there, but it doesn't last very long. Advertisers pull their money out because this is all corporatizing of what should be public property, public funds. And we have to put a stop to this. We've identified it. All of us have. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, as you just keep printing up money and expanding this out without really having any solid basis, it sets the stage for this hyperinflationary cycles that must come just as surely as if you drop a steel ball from the Empire State Building, is going to go whack the cement. All right, the ball has been dropped. Basically, that's the reality. We're either going to reform and restructure and tell the foreign bondholders, well, we're sorry, but look, you know, there's just no contract because it was based on fraud. The American people were not fully apprised of it. They had no idea what was happening. So how can this be forced to keep us under serfdom and slavery, which is really what it's designed to do?
Mm-hmm.
The question becomes a moral issue. Does the government of China really deserve the billions of dollars of repayment of these treasury bonds? When the imbalance of trade was because of the hundreds of millions of slave labor gulag camps that produced the imbalance, you see.
Mm-hmm.
It's an issue. Will this be an impetus to another world war? Yeah, it always seems to follow that. I explained in my DVD, the bursting debt bubble, Don, that the root cause of the American Revolution goes back to the debt that was incurred for the French and Indian War. The French and Indian War was caused because the French and Indian traders were given all of these paper currency script by the colonies, basically. And then King George makes it passes a law that only the dollars have to be backed by gold and silver, and so it disenfranchises the French and Indians to many millions of dollars in 1760 script.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's really the root cause of the 9-year French and Indian War. And then when the bill came due to King George III, well, he says, this wasn't my war. It was my dad's war, but it's the colonies' war. So you have Napolitano talking about the Stamp Act. Well, he didn't tell what else was, you know, to get those stamps. You couldn't go in and pay for it with silver or colonial script. You had to pay for it in gold, and the gold was very scarce. You see.
Yes. Well, if I can revert back for a moment to what Judge Napolitano talked about, if you look simply at the U.S. Constitution, and then you look at secret contracts, which you brought up, made without the knowledge of the people, for the express purpose of subjugating the people, and things, in other words, these obligations that we are not privy to, just because they created them doesn't mean that we have to be a party. Isn't that the issue that's facing the banks, the foreign banks that are illegally or unlawfully holding title to properties? And some of these properties have been either returned or the people holding the mortgages on these property or the obligation to pay the mortgage have either received the property or have been compensated for the loss of the property so they can go elsewhere and purchase a piece of property and build a house. Because that's going on doesn't mean that it's the Constitution itself is any different. They're secretly assigning debt to us. And or they can say, oh, we announced this, but they're not revealing the true reality. It's like a Ponzi scheme or just general racketeering.
Well, if it's all again, I said this to Bill Steele, my guest, kind of we weren't on the air, but I wasn't being facetious. I was pretty serious.
Mm-hmm.
If in fact the government of the United States has the right to print money, well, and let's say the national debt to the federal bankers is, let's say, $15 billion or $1 trillion. It's much higher than that in reality, but say it's $15 trillion. Well, what, you know, make a treasury note for $15 trillion and let them have it. It washes out. See, again, if the concept of money is just a medium of exchange to facilitate the transfer of goods and services, then it's a mental thing, you see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think Walter Burian calculated that we could take over the entire control or take back control of the U.S. Treasury for $500 million.
Easy.
Now, we could allow another 200 million people to come over the borders illegally and everybody just kick in a dollar and it's done. It's that simple. Or everybody put in $1.50 and shut down the borders.
You see, they've sucked out the interest on these bonds, the issuance of this currency by a private corporation. You have to have a mechanism to suck the lifeblood out of the people, and this is what the progressive income tax is all about. This is why you have the Federal Reserve and the IRS created in the same year of 1913. Mm-hmm. If you have a central bank with the debt structure, you're going to have to need a collection agency to take the money. And this is the secret, Don. You take all of the budget for defense. You take all of the main service budget of the federal government, and it has always been covered by excise taxes and or, you know, highway taxes, etc. It's historically always been that. All of the budget for the federal income tax is basically going to the bankers as interest on their fraudulent notes payable. See? Mm-hmm. And if you take away that charter, if you take away that racketeering or RICO, and you don't borrow the flour from your neighbor anymore, you start grinding your own flour, you save incredible amounts of hassles on the part of the people. There's no more tax need, see?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm interested in pursuing this issue of the non-vetting of candidates for this past election and the obligations of the individual states to make sure that was done. Do you think that was done under threat of having federal funds pulled out or denied? Not that the states are getting any federal funds, but you see, that whole concept keeps the states indebted to the federal government or the Federal Reserve, really. See, the Federal Reserve is not our government.
No, not at all.
And that's an issue as well.
It's the curtain that hides the wizard, really. That's what it's all about. Well, it's an interesting discussion for sure, Don. And again, I just want to invite our listeners to check out Bill Steele's latest video. It's a great job that he's done with it. It's, again, the Secret of Oz is the name of it. You can just go into YouTube and type in Secret of Oz video. You'll see it. It's great. Take time. And if you feel so impressed, get your own copy. Support him by buying a DVD.
Okay. So. Very good. Well, we're out of time. I appreciate you being on the show. You will be with us next Monday. Is that right?
I plan on it, unless I'm arrested for talking about
my
government.
The truth.
Yeah.
Well, maybe
good night, Don.
Maybe you'll get an impartial judge.
Oh, maybe. Holy cow.
All right. Well, you have a great evening. Again, I wish you a happy new year. Keep up the great work. And the show is The Story Behind the Story, Monday through Wednesday, on the Micro Effect Network. Thank you very much.
Indeed. Good night, Don, and God bless you, sir.
Okay. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and tonight's special guest, Dr. A. True Ott. Special thanks also to Wind Talkers Radio Network. And want to let you know that tomorrow evening, one of the Wind Talkers, actually he's the most popular talk show host on their network, Drew Malone Raines, the third, will be my guest. So be sure to tune in for that show. Over at bbsradio.com, I want to thank Seth Hendrick on the sound, Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.